This is the webinar that is about the new money. So the RFP, if you are planning on responding to the RFP, this is that webinar. I wasn't sure if we would have some new folks here. We obviously encourage people who've not received funding before to apply for funding. So I have a little bit of I have a few slides here that are about the continuum of care. You who are in attendance obviously know about it, so we won't spend too much time here. The continuum of care's objective is to make homelessness a rare and brief occurrence when it does happen. We achieve that work through a network of partners. Many of you are here today. Then those partners provide housing, obviously, case management, medical treatment, food security resources, utility assistance, job training, mainstream resources, education, and we could go on and on. Our network of partners is close to 300 different entities at this time. The continuum of care is a concept that HUD requires. It requires communities to have a continuum of care in order to receive continuum of care funding and also emergency solutions grant funding. HUD regulates how the COC funding can be used. So those two different pots of money can be used in different ways. HUD also tracks our progress and uses that as a metric for their funding decisions. On the local level, the continuum of care is responsible for developing and maintaining that network of partners I just talked about. It coordinates the local funding competition. We are a standalone COC where our adjacent continuums of care around us here in the state of Pennsylvania are made up of multiple counties. We are unique in that we are a standalone county, single county COC. Right now, our COC receives $2,855,746. These are the currently funded programs that make up that $2.8 million. So you can see all of those listed there. The column on the right shows which ones have chosen to reallocate. That is due to requirements in this NOFO that we spend no more than 30% of our total funding on permanent housing. So some of these permanent housing programs, which just as a reminder, permanent housing is both permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing. So some of those programs have decided to reallocate to become transitional housing programs, and you'll see those indicated there. The CARL program, Safely Home, and the Salvation Army's Rapid Rehousing Program.
I just have one quick question. I can't see your screen. Is that something on my end or is that something on your end?
Can others see the screen?
No, I just see
No.
you.
I was just thinking the same thing. Like, did I do something to where my
Oh, I
screen went
wish you would have
away?
said something sooner. You haven't really
Well,
missed much.
that was me. I kind of just it was clicking as I was watching you talk. I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to be seeing the screen.
Thank you for speaking up.
Yep, and Lisa's here as well.
Can you see it now?
Yes.
My apologies. As if we don't have enough stress in this competition. We have the technological stuff. Okay, let me move us ahead to where we were. I just talked about what the COC is, the difference on the federal level and the local level, and this is the slide we were just on. So these are our currently funded programs and the ones that are reallocating. Okay, so for the competition, there's two main documents that are going to guide our work. The interim rule are the regulations for the COC program, so it's important to be familiar with those. And then the notice of funding opportunity outlines all of the specific details for this specific competition. If you are renewing or even applying for new money, you should read this NOFO. All of the details are there. And this is one of those cases where the devil is in the details. Maybe there's a better way to say that, but there's a lot of details and it's easy to lose points if we don't address everything that they ask us to address. So it's important to read that. Okay, so As I said, this is the RFP meeting. So what money is available? There's three different pots of money. And we'll go through those now. The COC bonus money is just shy of $1 million. Me move this. Okay. It can be used to create new projects for permanent supportive housing, but only up to the number indicated there, $152,000. That's so that we don't exceed the 30% cap on permanent housing. The COC bonus money can also be used for transitional housing for HMIS, supportive services only, with a particular emphasis on outreach and supportive services only, coordinated entry. COC bonus funds can also be used to expand any renewals of these project types. Specifically, the details on COC bonus funds can be found on pages 37 and 38 of the NOFO. Let me go back. Any questions on the COC bonus money? Okay, the DV bonus money is just shy of $500,000, and it can be used to create new projects to serve people fleeing domestic violence situations through transitional housing or supportive services only coordinated entry. It can also be used to expand eligible renewals of these project types. The pages in the NOFO where you can find out more about that are 36 through 37. Let me stress here that the bonus, DV bonus money, can be used to serve people fleeing DV situations in a project that is not solely devoted to serving DV survivors. So, for example, one of our, like Stone Harbor, it's a transitional housing program not dedicated to DV survivors, but they could apply for bonus money to serve survivors within that program. DV reallocation is different in that it can only, those dollars can only go to a program that 100% serves people fleeing DV situations. So the project itself is dedicated to folks fleeing DV situations. And in this competition, it can only be used for transitional housing. Any questions on the DV funds, the bonus or reallocation? Okay, what's different? This is part of what's different in this NOFO. HUD has adjusted their goals and objectives in this competition. If you attended the webinar yesterday, this is the same. So we'll just sort of hit on them. Sort of quickly. The first one is focus on partnerships with law enforcement to reduce public encampments and public drug use. I think demonstrating the partnerships that we have with the police could be helpful here. Again, if you're a new project, if you have a good relationship with your police, being able to demonstrate that or mentioning that in your application would be beneficial. There is focus on prioritizing treatment, including on-site behavioral health treatment, robust wraparound services, and supportive services participation requirements. So behavioral health treatment, partnering with our behavioral health partners, is a good way to show that. On-site will get you more points. If you have an on-site option for treatment, robust wraparound services, I think our continuum of care is built around that. But being able to demonstrate partnerships that you have will be beneficial. And then the last one is requiring that the participants engage in supportive services. If you're going to indicate this in your project design, it's important that your project is ready to do this. So having policies in place, having forms in place, I think is important to you don't ever want to just check a box if you're not able to do it. That is a little bit of a shift from the past. So you might want to spend a little time focusing on that and what that might look like for your program. Improving self-sufficiency and economic independence. There's a good bit of focus on this year, particularly around employment income. So the thought is it ties in with the next one, the reducing returns to homelessness. If folks have a stable income, they can use that for stable housing and hopefully will not be returning to homelessness. So you will want to think about how to weave components of this into your new project, or if it's an expansion, how to perhaps enhance your efforts around increasing employment income and reducing returns to homelessness. As a continuum of care, we have monitored these outcomes for several years. So we have a good idea of what a benchmark might be. So if you need data, or if you need some help thinking about if you want to set some goals for your program, feel free to reach out to me. I can share some information with you. Our systems performance outcomes are on the bchmis.info website. So you can see those reports there and what the overall continuum of care, what our standards have sort of, what our outcomes have looked like over the last few years. There's also focus on minimizing trauma. Any training that we can do there, we know homelessness in and of itself is traumatic, not knowing where you're going to lay your head, let alone how you're going to ensure safety and warmth and food can produce some trauma in folks. And so we always want to make sure that we are approaching folks with that understanding. There's a number of great trainings out there for that. Also want to mention that any project that is funded through continuum of care funding has to participate in coordinated entry. And coordinated entry, by just the nature of what it is, I think reduces trauma as well. It, in theory, reduces the same questions being asked repeatedly. I know that still happens a little bit, but I think it reduces that a bit. But more impactfully, it reduces clients from having to call every single program. Number one, to have the phone number for every single program. And number two, to have to call and find out if there's vacancies and have to call multiple times until you find one that does have a vacancy. So that reduces trauma as well and could potentially be worth putting in your applications and proposals. Okay. So some of the new requirements and standards. I just wanted to go over those again. This is similar to yesterday's. I tweaked it a little bit based on some of our conversations. So thank you for some of those good questions. Okay, so we already talked about there's a 30% cap on permanent housing. We have a plan in place to move some of our permanent housing funds into transitional housing. So that will be a new approach for us. This year, there's also only 30% of our funding can go into tier one. So in the competition, we have to rank every project that we will be submitting, and the rank will determine whether or not it's in tier one or tier two. Historically, tier one has been around 90%. Tier one is usually safer. The way that they select those projects, it's a little bit looser. Tier two, it's a little bit more rigorous of a selection. So this is a big change for us in this competition. Projects will have to certify that they will not engage in ra racial preferences or other forms of illegal discrimination. Projects will also have to certify, that's not on this slide, but they will also have to certify that they will not operate safe drug use sites. So those are two things that if you're thinking about a new project that you should consider. if your agency can certify those things. There's more emphasis in this competition on past performance. So if you are applying for a new project, but you've been a recipient before, they will be looking at that past performance. If you are a new project and you have not been a recipient before, it's probably worth, highlighting where you can about how you will meet your project's goals, how you will ensure reports are submitted timely, how you will ensure all funds are expended, and how you'll produce positive outcomes. Okay, so in the COC competition, when we submit the COC application, it's the COC application, and then all of the project applications that have been selected will get submitted to HUD. HUD will then score the COC application, and that then aligns all the COCs as far as who gets funded first. So getting a high COC application score positions all the projects better to receive their funding. So I wanted to share here where we can get additional points on the COC application, and the projects can certainly help do that. So I just wanted to highlight some of these as you're thinking about your project ideas and crafting those projects. So we can get extra points if our total funding request has 30% supportive services. So as you're putting your budgets together, you may or may not be able to do that. Some projects might be able to do more than 30%. So it's all of the projects together. Where these points will be available is that consideration of all of the funding we're going to request. But if you can do it in your project, that's going to help us reach that collective goal. If you remember, going back to the COC bonus, there's a good bit of money available for supportive services. We will receive more points if 30% of our 30% of our projects and or 50 beds have on-site treatment. We'll receive more points with the creation of projects that have the sole purpose of providing substance abuse treatment. We will receive more points for formal and documented partnerships with behavioral health care providers and housing resources. The housing resources have to meet specific thresholds in order to get those points, and you can find those details on page 84 of the NOFO. But I can tell you, for permanent supportive and transitional housing programs, it has to be that 25% of the beds have an outside subsidy, so a subsidy that's not funded by the COC. And for rapid rehousing, well, rapid rehousing isn't an option with the new funding, so we don't need to address that here. We will receive extra points if
Yeah.
100% of,
I'm
yep, I
sorry,
hear a
Vicky, can you go
question.
back and repeat that last sentence again, please? About after the subsidies, like if they have to have other subsidy, I'm not sure what that means.
The housing resources, if you can leverage more housing resources, this is what we talked about. We did talk about
Yesterday.
this yesterday,
Okay.
that you have some beds that are supported with outside subsidies, outside funds. So if you say you're going to have 100 beds, you would have 25 beds that are funded a different way. That's for permanent supportive and for transitional. And I actually said rapid isn't in this. Yeah, rapid is not in this, in the RFP. For rapid, it's slightly different.
Dina.
Did I answer your question?
No, I'm confused even more. I'm sorry. So when you say they have to have other subsidies, like if we're creating a new project, they have to have other subsidies for part of the project?
We will receive more points if they do.
Okay. So we don't have to if we can't.
No, but if you can, it would be great. Yesterday, you guys had the idea about mainstream vouchers or something. So.
Well, so my We did. So my question was with that, like, so if they receive mainstream, say they're in PSH, for example, and they are eligible for mainstream, then once we transfer them to mainstream, they exit the program because,
Right. They have to be subsidies that they use while they're in the program. Now, yesterday you said about ongoing case management after they engaged with the voucher. That
oh,
would
okay.
work. But
Okay.
if they are exited once they receive the voucher, then no, that would not work.
Okay, I forgot we used that example. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. And again, page 84 goes into a little more detail. So take a look at that. And if you still have questions, don't hesitate to call and or reach out to the NOFO email, which we'll talk about here later in the webinar. We will receive more points for partnering with the VA. I think we're well positioned to be able to do that, but if your program can do it too, that's excellent. We will receive more points if we can demonstrate that 50% of our COC funds are used in opportunity zones. I clarified that those are tracks in Beaver, they're specific tracks in Beaver Falls and Midland. Oh, and Aliquippa, I think. If you need more information on that, you can find it on the HUD website, but it might be easier to just reach out to me. I'm happy to share that with anybody. And then we will also receive additional points if all of our the nonprofit charitable organizations who are applying for funding in this competition, if they all will verify immigration status using the SAVE system. There's more details about that on page 88. Any other questions on this? I know it's a lot to take in. Okay, so I can't. My Zoom's in the way. Hold on. Okay. So we put out a request for proposals for this money, the COC bonus, the DV bonus, and the DV reallocation funds. We put that out on Friday the 21st. We actually updated it yesterday. It was just because we had to change the date the projects are due in eSNAPs. That does not impact the RFP. That's if you're selected, that date changed. As far as the RFP is concerned, you can find it at the website on this page. It's the community development website. Proposals are due by noon on December 5th at the community development office, and that's the address listed there, 1013 8th Avenue, Beaver Falls. Projects will then be selected using the scoring matrix that was included with the RFP. So, as you're putting your proposals together, following the RFP instructions and looking at that scoring matrix is going to be the best way to get the most points. Any questions on that? Okay, once the projects from the RFP are selected, you will be notified hopefully that following Monday, the 8th. You will have then until 4 o'clock on the 19th to submit the application in eSNAPs. It would be great practice to just make sure that you have your eSNAPs login and have access to all of your projects and everything that you will need now. If you need to update your password or something's not right with your login, it can take a little bit of time to straighten that out. Remember, there's continuums of care across the country are doing exactly what we're doing right now and are also going to be scrambling to get into eSNAPs. So, better to check that out sooner than later. Okay, so then once everything's in eSNAPs, we will have a neutral committee score and rank those. An example of how they will be scored is also attached to the RFP. I'm sorry, the priority ranking will be submitted to HUD with the projects ranked high, more likely to receive funding. The COC will complete an application and all of the ranked projects will be attached to it, and we will submit it to HUD. So when you submit your applications in eSNAPS, they basically come to me, they stay here on the local level, and then once everything is ready to go, then we submit it all at one go. The county will submit that as at one go. So you don't actually submit to HUD. When you hit submit, it comes to me. I can always return them back to you as long as it's before the deadline. And that's going to be, you see, it's a tight turnaround time. So if you want feedback, submit it. Submitting it a little earlier would be better. I have not heard this directly from HUD, but I've heard through some reputable resources that HUD is hoping to make the funding, announce the funding decision in May. Okay, if you are, let's see, where are if you are thinking of a new project, review it with me so we can make sure it's eligible and that you're fully aware of the requirements. We'll also want to think about, do we have local need for that? Answer all the questions posed in the RFP and on the selection score sheet to score the most points. That's, I'm saying that a second time because that's so important. There have been times we get proposals, and although they're very well written and there's lots of detail, it's not the detail that we're asking for. So make sure that's how you get the points. So make sure that you're answering what's being asked. Again, you'll only have about 2 weeks to submit. Then, if you're selected, you'll only have about 2 weeks to submit the application in eSNAPS. So be prepared to act fast. Again, get that eSNAPS login straightened out. This website that's on this page is where all the new project detailed instructions will be and the navigational guides. So you'll want to check that out too, so you can be familiar with the next steps. Okay, any questions?